This is Pacifica's Peace Watch. I'm Verna Avery Brown. While it was supposed to be a tidy little photo op for Homeland Security Director Tom Ridge at a high school in suburban Maryland this morning, Ridge pledged funding for safer schools in the face of terrorism. But it turned into a noisy rally when about 300 kids walked out of the building in protest of Ridge's boss. The kids say Homeland Security could be achieved through a more diplomatic foreign policy. Josh Chaffin has this report from Silver Spring, Maryland.
Most of the student protests in the U.S. and around the world this week happened on Wednesday. But with the Tom Ridge visit, the kids at Montgomery Blair High had an excuse to walk out today. Ridge and Education Secretary Rod Page came to announce the creation of a $30 million fund for terrorism preparedness in high schools. And the kids weren't having it.
We don't want you at our school. Tom Ridge, we're no fools. We don't want you at our school.
Yeah, we don't want him at our school.
Why not?
He wants to influence war, and that's not good. We want no war.
What's your name?
David Chim.
Teresa Marshall.
Thank you. What's your name?
Sarah.
What are you doing?
I'm protesting the war against Iraq.
But Tom Ridge is here.
Yeah.
Is that a problem?
Yeah, because he supports Bush and we don't.
I'm Brian Davis. I'm with all these other students from all over Montgomery County and D.C. All these code reds and terror drills and stuff in school are basically distracting, and it's propaganda and stuff about security and terror and stuff. If they can scare us all, they can get our support and get support for the war and stuff like that.
Austin, AUSTIM. They're trying to promote fear. You know, if kids are scared in school and they feel like this is sort of a necessary thing that they have to have, then it might be easier for them to get caught into the idea that the people are out to get them.
They actually tell you that it's like code orange or code red today, and they change the conditions of your school during those times?
Yeah, sure. You're locked in your classroom whenever they do a code red or whatever, and you can't get out and or do anything, and basically they want you to sit around like the perimeter of the classroom away from the door and like hide. It's really ridiculous.
Kids are trying to get in the door. They got pushed back. What's your name?
Chanathi Musker.
What's your sign say?
It says, "I won't be controlled by fear."
What do you mean?
The only reason they want to go to war is because they don't know really what Iraq wants, and they're controlling our whole state by their fear.
A widely circulated Associated Press report today on the Tom Ridge High School security event didn't mention the protest outside.
I think they invited him here because they think we're a model school and that they want to show off our school, but we don't want war.
The kids at Blair High School say the real anti-war walkout starts when the war starts. Josh Chaffin for Peace Watch in Silver Spring, Maryland.
Across the U.S., Army Reserve units are being called into action for deployment to the Middle East. Much to their surprise and their chagrin, Reservist Marcus Adolphus is among them.
A National Guard member, which is similar to like a reservist.
So when you're not in your reserve capacity, what kind of work do you do?
I'm the program director for the Robert F. Kennedy Fellows Program. It's an AmeriCorps program.
So until now, as a member of the National Guard, you just kind of played Army one weekend out of the month. But I would imagine now, suddenly, this is seeming like more serious business. Did you ever expect to have to actually suit up?
I mean, well, you know, when you sign your name on a dotted line and you swear to uphold the Constitution, it's always in the back of your mind. Well, my reason for joining, I graduated high school, and I said, I don't know, what do I want to do with my life? And me and my best friend, we both heard about the National Guard and that they offer money for school, for tuition. So we both voluntarily went in to see a recruiter without him even having to ask us. And we just joined up together, and that's how I got to, you know, get to Howard University with the tuition assistance. It paid a portion, not as large as I wish it could, because I'm now paying student loans. But it, you know, it helped out. It helped out, and it really kind of motivated me to go on and pursue my goals, and then also show my parents, hey, this guy is serious. He wants to really go to school. So it was like a motivation tool, and it was a way for me to prove, you know, myself to my parents that, hey, I'm serious about obtaining an education. Going through the military, it's trying, you know, going through basic training, being disciplined, you know, just looking not for right now, but for and what will be in the future. That took a lot, and it also helped me to gain a lot of, you know, skills and helped me to realize what goals I really want to achieve.
And you feel that way even though you've received your orders now?
Right. Even though I received my orders, I still am grateful. If you hear that, hey, you're going to be deployed to a war situation, I mean, anybody is just normal human sense that, hey, this is not what I want to do. I have to put my life on hold for who knows how long. I don't know where I'm going to go. You just have to go. But I came to terms with it. It took me a day, really, to, like, take it all in. Then I came to terms with having to go, you know, because why be upset and just miserable? Because this is going to make it even longer.
Do you know exactly where you're going?
No, I do not.
How much time did you have left to serve in the reserves?
I was supposed to exit out of the military in July of this year. So I was looking forward to getting out and doing other things. I really wanted to look into Peace Corps or grad school.
Is this a war that you personally support and believe to be justified?
This, my personal opinion, I'm not speaking on behalf of the military, but it's my personal opinion. I really am hesitant about this conflict that is about to erupt, because I understand about Saddam Hussein, that he is a dictator, that he is a very bad person, but I just really would think that the world's opinion should be the same as the American opinion. If he's such a horrible man, and if he's such a threat to our national security, I would think that, hey, the whole world would feel the same. So I'm kind of hesitant about what is our justification for really going over there. Why now? Why do we have to just target Saddam Hussein? What about North Korea? What about Iran, Iraq, all of these other countries that also have these weapons of mass destruction that can easily use them against American people?
Do you think that your opinion or position is rare within amongst your reservist colleagues, or are there others that share these opinions?
I mean, there's plenty of people that don't feel that this is a justified war, but what you have to do is you take an oath, and you have to abide by the commander-in-chief, so you carry out what he or she says we have to do. So,
have you considered going in as a conscientious objector?
Well, I'm going in with my own opinion, but it's not like I'm going to go over there and protect the United States. I'm going over there and perform all the duties that I am asked to do. But you always have your own opinion. That's just normal. Everyone has their own opinion, but I know what I am called to do and what I'm supposed to do, so I will carry that out.
Are you likely to be in harm's way?
You know, every day you're in harm's way, so you just got to ask, you know, for grace and mercy from whoever your God is. And I'm just praying, you know, for, first of all, world peace, and praying for the world in general, not just myself and not just other family members, but the Iraqi people, American people, every country, every leader who makes a decision. We just pray for peace and pray that, you know, people will not turn to war, you know, in the future.
28-year-old reservist Marcus Adolphus speaking with Peace Watch from the D.C. Armory, where he reported this morning for duty. With a quarter of a million troops poised to invade Iraq on the home front, the U.S. military is coming under intense scrutiny for mounting claims of sexual harassment. In Colorado Springs, 54 female Air Force Academy cadets have lodged complaints of rape and sexual assault. And as Michael G. Haskins reports from New York, life inside the military smacks of not only gender discrimination, but also institutional racism.
24 current and former cadets have come forward with stories of rape and sexual assault at the Colorado Springs Air Force Academy. The cadets felt their complaints were not taken seriously, and in some cases, the victims said they were punished. The Air Force today announced they would fully investigate the women's claims. Some cadets have complaints that go back 10 to 15 years. Asif Ullah, project coordinator for the Roots Project of the War Resisters League, points to a study commissioned by the Veterans Administration with statistics as alarming as those at the Air Force Academy.
According to a study done by Murdoch and Nichols, two independent investigators who were commissioned by the Veterans Administration in 1996, they did a study of women in a hospital in Maryland, in Baltimore, Maryland, a Veterans Administration hospital, and they found that 90% of women in that hospital had experienced sexual harassment. And they also found that one out of three women in that hospital reported, not officially, but again, like from that hospital, reported being sexually violated or raped.
With the increasing number of women in the armed services, promotions and favorable duty assignments are used to extract sex from its female officers and enlisted personnel.
Women who refuse to provide any type of sexual favors are less likely to receive any type of promotion. And so that harassment and rape is 20 times higher for women in the military than any other government employees.
Meanwhile, issues of racism are also prevalent in the U.S. Armed Forces. Narda L. Robertson is an active duty captain in the United States Army. Having worked her way up from an entry-level private, she is now a senior captain in the Signal Corps stationed at Fort Benning, Georgia. Robertson has no civilian criminal record and is under no disciplinary actions under the military's Uniform Code of Military Justice. Captain Robertson has served two tours in Germany and South Korea and been deployed in Somalia and Haiti. Yet Robertson was passed over for promotion to major twice, and her official file had information deleted, which she says smacks of racism.
I reviewed my file, known as an officer record brief, in March. After reviewing it, you have to sign to certify that the information is accurate and it's as current as possible. When my packet went before that August board, that is not what the board reviewed. So I learned later the information that I submitted and certified as being correct had been deleted. That's not what the board members saw.
Robertson says the level of discrimination in the military is higher than may be apparent. While making sure her own records are updated as per Army regulations, Captain Robertson has been in contact with other black female officers who have stories similar to hers.
People have been coming across my path. An Air Force officer that is also a twice non-select for Lieutenant Colonel. She has been fighting with different issues, EO, since 99. And she's utilized the chain of command, just as I have, and has received no support, no resolution, all the way up to the level of Department of Justice.
Calls to the Deputy Public Affairs Officer of Army Personnel, Cheryl Lawrence, met little response. Lawrence said she knew nothing about Robertson's case, nor would she speak about it, citing confidentiality. While the racism Robertson faces has led her to speak out, despite facing retribution for speaking to Peace Watch about her case after utilizing the Army's chain of command, Robertson feels it is important because she sees the problem as institutionalized.
But I think it's important for people to be aware that the sons and daughters that were recruited to volunteer in today's Army, they need to know that leaders have a sole responsibility to ensure the health and welfare of that person. No soldier, airman, or civilian would be working or would have joined the military for maltreatment based on what appears to be racially motivated.
Both Captain Robertson and Asif Ullah agree that with thousands of women of color in the military today, their chances for merit advancement are minimal. For Pacifica's Peace Watch, I'm Michael G. Haskins.
Women have played a key role in the burgeoning U.S. anti-war movement, and recent polls on Iraq reveal a gender gap in terms of support for a war. A February 2003 New York Times CBS poll revealed that 12% more women than men support a diplomatic solution with Iraq. A recent Zogby International poll showed that while 45% of men said they would strongly support a war against Iraq, only 21% of women did. As women around the world prepare to commemorate International Women's Day this weekend, Carolyn Crane files this report.
Hello, you've reached Amber's Books and Secondhand Store. Please leave your name and number if you would like to participate in the Gathering of the Women on March 8th, the parade, the storytelling, poetry reading, music, belly dancing, face painting, food, booths, etc. Any involvement you would like to have, please leave your name and phone number. Thank you so much.
This year, on International Women's Day, women will gather in the name of peace and justice in 17 countries around the world and 34 states in this nation. The grassroots movement that spawned these gatherings began on the Internet less than a year ago. California activist Joan Buffington.
The idea is to look inside, to see where you want to be, what you can do, help in interaction with others, to build a sense of reflection, and then of healing, and then of connection, and then visioning, and all that building up to action. So that this is very much a movement of bringing women into action. That's what it's all about. Many of us who've not been very active in the community before have been really motivated by being on the brink of war.
Flourishing symbiotically with Gather the Women is Code Pink, the Women's Preemptive Strike for Peace, co-founded by longtime organizer Jody Evans and Global Exchange's Medea Benjamin. Like Gather the Women, Code Pink has big plans for Saturday, March 8th.
Here we have been sitting outside of the White House since November 17th in vigil and fast. Thousands of women have come from around the country to sit with us, and this is just kind of a culmination of that, of celebrating those women who have sat out in the cold and celebrating all the global women peacemakers around the world.
The feminine face of the peace movement gains momentum and media attention weekly. California activist Judy Weisbart became an organizer for Gather the Women after attending the Global Women's Peace Conference in Geneva last October.
In Geneva, I had an experience that said to me that the gathering of the women on this planet is the voice for change. And I understand that we all have different views. I think that the only view that we need to understand is the one of women, which is the voice that is not 50% of the conversation. And in Geneva, it was all of the conversation. And you realized how the missing link between peace and justice and nonviolence on this planet is that, exactly that, which is that those voices must become the partners in the decisions on this planet. And in Geneva, we decided that we needed to come together on this International Women's Day to speak out as a voice for a different way of looking at how to deal with the world. It is dealt with, unfortunately, with a linear male concept of justice and righteousness. And the reality is that we are 50% of the planet, and we need to be 50% of the voice.
The Gather the Women movement is calling for women to come together in meditation, healing, and purposeful action in their own communities. Marilyn Nyborg, one of the project's global coordinators.
I think we all know the power of coming together as a group with a purpose and an intention. And if it's just one group doing that, we know there's a great power in that happening, in the awakening within the individuals and their feeling strengthened by the group process, if you will. And imagine that happening all over the country and all over the world in so many different forms on that particular day. I mean, we know there will be women in Israel that will be joining us and in Palestine that will be joining us. So there's a huge overlay of energetic power.
While Gather the Women creates community circles for peace and justice this Saturday, Code Pink, headquartered in Washington, D.C., calls for a specific gathering there.
You know, from the moment we called Code Pink, it is a call. It is a desperate call for women to stand up, speak out, shout out, be the primal scream that we feel inside at the disaster of invading Iraq, at the disaster of the aggression that comes out of the White House, not just directed towards the Iraqi people, but what the destabilization it would be for the Middle East, the loss of those funds for the things we desperately need them for in America, the move to create such a disruption from what looks like desire for oil and imperial power.
Code Pink's Medea Benjamin.
Through Global Exchange, we have been for years working on peace as well as economic issues around corporate globalization. And suddenly we see, thanks to George Bush, an incredible convergence of all the issues we've been working on at Global Exchange, of how the economic domination by U.S. corporations around the world is really part and parcel of a military domination, how, as Thomas Friedman said, you can't have McDonald's without McDonnell Douglas. And suddenly these global movements that we've been working with for years around stopping corporate-dominated globalization have merged with this peace movement to have an incredible network around the world for peace and justice. And then dovetailing with that is really, where do we get the voice of sanity coming from? And it just seemed like at this time in our history, it should be coming from women committed to nonviolent solutions to conflicts.
New Jersey activist Shakira Abdullahi, an organizer for Gather the Women, is planning a small gathering in Manhattan on March 8th.
I attended a Women of Vision and Action conference in February, and I thought, this is really something that we should pay more attention to. So when I came back, I contacted a number of the women, and we decided that we would meet on Saturday, March the 8th, in Manhattan. And we're going to have a small gathering of women on that Saturday to combine our energy with women from around the world and hopefully bring some sanity to the madness that is ensuing here and being generated out of Washington.
Through meditation and prayer, women intend to connect with others globally. Of particular concern are the women of Iraq. Medea Benjamin.
I organized a delegation of 15 women who have been part of this Code Pink Women for Peace to go to Iraq. We went in the beginning of February for a 10-day visit, had an incredibly profound experience there, and it was an opportunity for us to have constant interaction with the Iraqi people. And every time we were out there vigiling, we would have dozens and sometimes hundreds of men, women, and children coming up to talk to us, coming up to thank us for what we were doing, and really to express to us their desire for peace, their terror about a pending war, and their confusion about why Bush was doing this. They are absolutely terrified because they have no defenses. They understand that the Iraqi army is incapable of defending them against the overwhelming military might of the United States. They also feel that they have no place to hide because in the past, even bomb shelters have been the targets of U.S. attacks. They have very little food supplies. In fact, they are dependent on a government ration for their very existence, and war would undoubtedly destroy that distribution system, so they're worried about how they'll be able to continue to feed their children. And they are absolutely agonizing over what will happen if their electricity grid is destroyed, if their water system is further degraded, if the basic infrastructure is blown to bits. They and the United Nations has said that this will be an absolute catastrophe for the Iraqi people, the majority of whom are under 18 years of age.
What changes will the actions of March 8th bring to the women and children of Iraq and to the political climate in general? Shakira Abdul Ali.
The idea is to generate energy that reverberates in some small way. And I think that if all of the women who gather can achieve just that small thing, I think we can make a difference. I think we can bring some impact.
Judy Weisbart.
Women have this propensity for networking and for joining together in a way that is not as visual as men do, but in a way that's very much the fabric of the society and the community. A lot of people don't realize that they have the voice and don't understand the opportunities that exist.
Medea Benjamin.
We've seen that shift happening in the last couple of months, and so we have just been building up an incredible network, and these Code Pink groups have been springing up in towns and cities across the U.S., as well as places overseas. We've had contacts from groups in Costa Rica, in Denmark, in places in the Middle East that have said they've started their own Code Pink organizations of women and their male allies. So we see this buildup happening, and March 8th will just be a way to further these kinds of networks between and among women nationally and globally, who are determined to change the course of history by not only stopping George Bush from invading Iraq, but also reorienting our governance priorities here in the United States and building international institutions that look out for the interests of the global community.
Jody Evans.
Well, actually, when we first started to call Code Pink, originally it was just to stop the oppression in all forms. And they still exist in America, and once we stop the war, we will continue and continue to have an influence in the 2004 elections. I think that what this has done is wake up a lot of women to their voice and to the capacity they have to recreate their world and to know that another world is possible, and they are the creators of it. And I just want to, you know, encourage everyone, women and men and children, to come out and join us in this amazing experience on March 8th. The rally begins at 11 at Malcolm X Park. We will then march down 16th Street, and then in a fabulous pageant ritual, wrap the White House, spin the power out of the White House and into the people.
Visit GatherTheWomen.org and CodePink4Peace.org for details about tomorrow's gatherings, produced by Carolyn Crane.
Pacifica's Peace Watch is produced in Washington, D.C. Scott Gurian is our producer. Our editor is Lona Elias. Our engineer is Granger Helvey. We had production assistance from Adil Hamad of KPFA, Patrick Higgins, Mike Aloney, and Fahima Sek. Thanks to Pete Caracas, RadioForAll.net, and Shane Rock at WebActive.com for web help. You can also visit WebActive.com to listen to archives of past Peace Watch programs. I'm Verna Avery Brown, the executive producer. Thank you for listening.